Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Swung on, lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 182. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll talk about Cleveland getting a new name. They're going to be called the Guardians after the 2021 season. We'll talk about that, how it happened, and what we think of the name. We'll talk about Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale going to the 60-day DL. Not completely unexpected, but talk about what that means, when they can actually come back, and if they'll be back to help really a playoff push or just kind of going towards 500. Talk about that. And Tristan McKenzie, is he good now? Talk about that. He's had a good game last game. On Sunday, has had a couple of games in the past, a couple bad ones, but figure out if he's actually good or if this is just another blip. And we'll talk about the trade deadline, what Cleveland can do, whether they're buying or selling. Joining me for all that more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Thank you for asking. Thanks for having me.
I know you're a special guest this week, not usually on, but Merritt Rolfing, have you heard of him? This guy over here. I forgot to mention we'll do meatballs too, because I don't have one. I forgot to write it down. But
we'll meatball it sounds like.
Yeah. singular meatball.
One big old meatball. You know, I went to an Italian restaurant. They did have that as an appetizer. Literally just one large meatball.
Was there anything else? Is that a normal thing? Just one?
I don't know. It's what I got as an appetizer.
It was just great. A big old meatball on a plate?
Yeah, just in a little bowl. I had a little sauce on it with it, but you know, yeah, no pasta or anything. And then I got meatballs for it.
I can't pretend like I haven't made meatballs for something and then just ate a bunch of meatballs. So.
Yeah, of course. That's what you have to do. They're right there for eating. Like, my mom used to do that all the time, and I'd like, have to steal meatballs off the broiling tray and burn my hand and my tongue.
But... Worth it, though. You just go face first into it and get them off. 100%. You don't want to ruin it with your fingers or anything.
Why don't you crush the meatballs? I ain't got time for letting things cool down and, you know, things like that.
Now, that would be a perfect way to go into meatballs. But I think we should talk about the name change first. That's kind of the big deal of what happened this week, I guess, unless you consider, I can't think else, anything else that the team did besides not getting swept by the Rays. So
there you go,
It's the name change. We found out on Friday, that they're going to be the Guardians after the 2021 season. There was a lot of leaks leading up to it. Very small rumblings a while ago with two random people who said they had sources that said it was going to be the Guardians for sure. I still don't know if they made that up, but then there was, what is his name? McNeil Reflog 18 on Twitter. He said on Thursday that he had a source that said it was coming on Friday. And then of course we heard from Cleveland.com and it was either WKYC or the Akron Journal. One of them was saying that it was for sure coming soon. They had made a decision, but they weren't sure. And then, of course, on Friday, we found out it was the Guardians, which is, of course, it's not named after the statues that are outside the Guardians of Traffic there, but it pulls inspiration, is the way Paul Dolan put it. So we have our name for next year, which is exciting because it's been – we here at Covering the Corner haven't used Indians for a while, so it's kind of neat to have a name to say again. It feels a lot different. It also feels – like a lot of times, like saying a team name is harder than saying just the city. Like it fits so much better in a sentence to say the city. But we have Cleveland Guardians after 2021, and we're basically using it now on the site too. Like because we haven't said Indians, so we might as well say Guardians, which is cool because I like Guardians. I think it's a cool name. What do you think of it overall? The name, the logo, we saw that too. So what are your thoughts on all of it so far?
You know, just as you described that process, I thought to myself, how does this a random joke Twitter account have sources within the Cleveland Indians or Cleveland baseball team?
I don't think this is the first time he's gotten those.
No, it's not, is the thing. Like he's done this a few times. I'm like, how? Yeah. Oh, whatever. Who cares? It's very strange.
And it felt like, too, between that and the other stuff, I wonder if they were, like, rushed into doing it. Because I heard that on Friday night or Thursday night, they were still getting the rights, some kind of legal thing to get it, so they were right up to the wire. I wonder if because of all the bubbles that were coming out, like they had to rush to get this thing out.
Yeah, great management of the press by the front office there. Very proud of them. As for the name, it's fine. You know, I wish they changed the colors. I wish a bunch of other things. As I mentioned before we started recording, I'm already sick to death of name change discourse because between people just complaining to complain and people who have no knowledge of anything, or people who just want to be mad about stuff, it made for most things to be quickly insipid. I was tired of it after about an hour and a half on Friday, which sucks if it continued. I feel like it petered out a bit by now. I'm excited to buy a cool hat with a flying winged G baseball sandwich situation going on there. That's going to be a lot of fun. I was kind of hoping they'd go with something weird and different. A friend of mine and a former writing colleague kept suggesting that Foresters, because it is the forest city historically, and I thought that'd be cool. A cool different thing. And I like foresters and forests, and they could have gone with green as the main color, with maybe purple. It was an idea I had. But no, it's a fun name, you know.
I would have loved green to purple even with the Guardians. That would have been cool.
I was talking to my dad about this, and I think in my mind, the colors that make the most sense for them to transition to would be something akin to like what the Padres were wearing before they switched back to their brown, like kind of that blue and gold mix.
Yeah, and they had an Art Deco kind of font too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, they did not.
I mean, it was very bland, but yeah, it made me think of Art Deco just because of...
Right, and I think the coloring... Because when I think Art Deco, obviously, I think of two things. Batman, the animated series, obviously, and then like movies that take place in the 1930s in Los Angeles, because they always have to show the police department, which is an Art Deco design.
Yeah, and Bioshock. How could you not mention Bioshock?
I only played Bioshock for like 10 minutes because I found it boring. So there you go.
Yeah, but yeah, I would have liked even, I like the name, but I would have loved, like, they could have done green, and it's still, if they didn't want to be the Foresters, which that didn't sound like it was one of the ones towards the end, like, you could still honor it and have more things to connect to Cleveland, because the statues do connect really well, I think, more than any other name, like the Guardians, because of how close they are and what they are. It's kind of weird that they aren't leaning on the statues as much as I think they should. They didn't.
Aren't they like right there, like right outside of the stadium?
Oh yeah, there's lots of pictures you can get with them. I wonder if they're just worried about tying their identity to something else physical in the city, like they could be torn down or something, and then whoops, that's done. So it's just kind of like a side thing. But they're posting about it a lot on their social media, so they're not hiding from it. But it would be cool if they centered it around that and maybe did like some kind of video explaining the connection, because a lot of people outside of Cleveland didn't seem to even get that there was
not at all
connection. But that's the appeal of it too, I think.
Yeah, it's a very interesting local thing. I mean, it has more of a tying to its, you know, its local roots than say the Giants. There are no Giants in San Francisco or East Rutherford for that matter
that we know of.
That's fair. Good point. but I'd say if anything, it's akin to the Rays or the Rangers or the. And I think everyone thought Rays was a stupid name for a long time anyway.
Oh, it's the worst. There used to be the Devil Rays. That was awesome.
That was a way cooler name, but apparently cursed. And, you know, if we really want to start thinking about sports names in general, you know, they're all stupid. So if you really want to think this one's dumb, you're dumb. That's my opinion. I think it's fun and a little different. And even if it does seem generic in its own in a way, I can understand that because we all play too many video games. We've all done create a franchise, and there's always that existing.
I think no matter what, it's going to look generic up front. Like,
I'm glad they didn't go with any of the other leading names, honestly. Spiders, I never wanted. I understand it's a tie into the history, but that team did stink, in case we all forget. Like, very bad, bad. I never wanted Naps, really. I love Naps, but, you know, I don't know.
And I mean, Walleyes was one of the finalists.
See,
which is awful.
All right. I guess they could have made some sort of play off the word eerie, which would have been fun. But this is, like, I mean, theme. I hate to say, yes, exactly. Thank you. I hate to say this is as good as you're going to get, because I think it's a pretty good name. And I honestly, I'm assuming that they're going to do some further uniform and stuff changes because,
oh yeah,
if nothing else, I really hope they get away from the script and the red, white, and the blue. Cause there's like a million teams that use some combination of red, white, or blue, or just red and white or blue and white. Like I pretty much named every single team except
You're trying to think of one, aren't you? I mean, the Padres are
the A's and the Padres. That's it. And I guess the Mariners is kind of a green blue because of the C and the White Sox. And I think that's every single team that doesn't use red, white, or blue in some combination. And so just to be more unique, because like I mean, look, at the end of the day, we're talking about a very small market team that doesn't get a lot of recognition, especially now that that's going to have a controversial name. So outside of having a guy with very little personality win a Cy Young or trading away some future superstar, they don't really get a lot of play. So you got to do something weird, like with the Padres and their cool brown uniforms, or the Mariners and just being
I love their whole thing. Everything.
About the Mariners' whole thing is cool. Their throwbacks are cool. Moose. The blue and gold thing is neat. Like everything. Oh, yeah. Their whole vibe is just kind of neat and different. And like their colors don't make any sense. Silver and sea foam green or something, and black and whatnot. So I do something a little more remarkable, I guess, is what I want. Look at the Tigers. The Tigers have such cool colors, and they always have. Like, they're one of, what, two teams? The fact that the hat doesn't match the D on the uniform, and the fact that they use orange, but only on their away jerseys and not their home jerseys, so confusing. Just, like, it's a wonderful mishmash. And I think that if you're going to be a minor league team, Jesus Christ, if you're going to be a small market team and also a minor league team for the big teams out there, do something remarkable and easily marketable. And I think that that's something that the Guardians kind of creates something to jump off of. I just hope that they kind of really lean into it and start doing something interesting, cool. But yeah, I think gold or metallic colors, I think, jump out at me as the path forward.
Yeah, I do like
royalty.
Yeah, you mentioned that they stayed with the script. It just does not work with that many letters, I think, is the biggest problem. Like, that combined with the fact they tried to make it, like, pointy, like the statue, which was kind of a weak connection to begin with.
I think the G-U-A-R in script doesn't work together, because it just looks like a bit of a smudge.
There's so many more letters. Like, Indians is just I-N. They got to cram all these. I mean, there's no way they're going to replace that Indians light below the progressive or above the scoreboard. There's no way you're going to fit Guardians up there and it's going to stay. I don't know what they're going
to
do there.
Well, and if they do it, I would hope they do it more like if you ever go to like Oriole Park or Camden Yards, just have Orioles like in big block letters. Do something like that instead of...
Or give me that big flying baseball. I'm all for that. I love that thing.
Yes.
That's grown on me a lot. Like, I saw people hate it because they wanted a big, scary statue man face. But I'm really glad they want the fun, creative one.
I want both. You know, I kind of want, like, I do want the mask out of the horrifying Art Deco monstrosity, but also his little buddy, the little flying baseball. And I want both these things. I think embracing the... Because the thing about Art Deco in general, too, is... It's absolutely terrifying if done correctly. Like in the hit movie Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow, that nobody saw. That's all Art Deco. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Just a really soulless, emotionless, crushing machines is what I see when I see those statues or anything like that. Really, honestly, there's a certain emptiness to it.
There's so many little connections they can do, like what the scoreboard videos they're going to do. I'm sure like on field stuff. I hope they don't shy away from it because obviously they haven't been able to do anything with Indians, but now they have Guardians. They can do. As much as I hate the Marvel thing everybody's been talking about, like, you could do a Guardians of the Galaxy night. Why not? People do Star Wars nights all the time. I think that'd be kind of cool.
It's a minor league. Yeah, go find the most successful minor league team out there and see what they're doing for promotions and listen to them. Because
it's even a major league thing. People do Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Anywhere, so, you gotta make yourself interesting and fun, you know? Do it that way.
And I like the idea of, like, a big moment coming up, and there is, like you mentioned, Art Deco was so void and terrifying. Like, on the scoreboard, just that big statue is imposing over
staring
everybody.
Down. Like, damn, that's awful.
It's going to be so good. Because only the batter's going to see it, and you can intimidate him with it. So, I mean, there's so many fun things that you can do. So, I'm looking forward to just not having a racist name and one you can sort of, like, lean into a lot. One of the things, I don't know before this season how much I believed in how important a name was, but, like, not using the team name for so long. Like, and it creates a connection that was gone. Like,
and I know I say it sometimes on the podcast too, because I don't know what else to say, but like, I don't write it. I know that for a fact. And so it's just like you said, it's just saying the team, the Cleveland baseball team. Like, I live in DC where they're playing on not having a team name here too, which is bizarre. I don't know.
It's weird.
It gets weird. Like, when you listen to sports radio here, they say the Washington football team. It's just like, what? I don't know. It creates a
disconnect too. Like, you can't get as involved as like cheering for the Guardians. You're just cheering for Cleveland, which is different. So
I know there's always the argument like, oh, well, Premier League soccer has never had names, but like, they always kind of gain informal names. I just don't think that American fandom is creative enough to come up with some new creative name that it doesn't accidentally tie back to what it used to be. So we're kind of stuck with having to give a name to something. And whether it's Cleveland, whether it's here in DC, whether it's Braves eventually switching over to the Hammers, which I think is number one, the coolest idea for a nickname. Like, that rocks, honestly, man. Like, I've seen several people mention that. I'm like, that's a cool name. It's way better.
Like, sounds good. Atlanta Hammers. That rolls well.
It pops, right? I like it a lot.
But yeah, that's Cleveland's name, Guardians after this year. We're excited about it. You mentioned the hat. I want to get one of those. I need
both hats. I like the
I'm
kind of
disappointed.
G
yeah, or C or whatever. It's so good. Yeah. But I'm kind of disappointed we didn't see the flying G on the hat. In the mock-ups, it was only the C, which is good. It's a really good C. I think it's better than the block C, but I want to see that little winged buddy on a hat. I hope they have release him. I'm sure they release him for like fans, but I hope they use him in some kind of uniform.
But like winged buddy too. Yeah, yeah. Some sort of alternate. An alternate with the early 70s red pullovers, but with Guardians on the front instead of Indians, obviously, with the little flying buddy hat. Oh, man. And also, I have to say, I do love the new C because it's not a stupid block C. It's in some ways remarkable.
It right? looks like a baseball logo now.
Right, exactly. It's not something like someone pressing a letter on the this one. Cool. Like, you know, the Reds one is interesting. The Cubs one is iconic. What other C logos are there? You get the idea.
Yeah, and it's also just like the block C, there's too much space in there. And like with the diamond C, they did it so it like squeezed together, but that fills in that space. So it's not like a big void and it just doesn't look good. So I'm really happy with all the branding they did with it. I wasn't big on Guardians at the beginning. I accepted it as it was clear, like that was inevitable. And then now I'm straight up excited for it after seeing all the stuff they did with it, getting Tom Hanks to narrate it. Sure, why not? I'll be excited if
I need them to continue the rebrand to further steps. Like I said before, colors and adjusting some things, but
yeah, I think they're probably stuck with the colors at least. But part of it, they mentioned all the fans they talked to. I can't imagine how many fans say, you don't change anything. We got to stick to our roots. And like they took that to, you got to change as little as possible, which is kind of what they did. So,
well, you just change it slowly and no one will notice. And just, you know what you do?
The Photoshop, nothing. You go like 1 inch every year.
Yeah. It's like, oh, what? It's always been this kind of weird, foamy green.
We're getting over to the gold and purple eventually.
Ooh, I like this idea of a dark green, like a dark blue green, actually. I'm going to be thinking about this for a while now.
I mean, there's so many, like gold and purple, or what did you mention? Green and purple, I think is really
green good. Green and purple would be good. Purple and gold are my school colors. That'd be fun. Gold and brown is my little brother's school color, so that'd be fun too. And it's garish, I'll say that much.
I mean, it's the Padres too.
So. Oh, good point. I didn't think about that. I mean, the Wyoming Cowboys wear much more of the brown. I think that really pops. So,
yeah, the brown pops. You know what? You know what else pops, Matt?
Tell me. Gross.
Meatballs pop, Matt. So weekly meatball segment. I don't have one this week, but you said you do, and you said it's super good, and nobody's going to be disappointed. And you spent so much time researching.
I did actually.
It's probably the best meatball ever. So go ahead.
So I have two techniques when it comes to meatballs. It's either something I remember I saw, or it's I pick a player and I find something interesting they did in the last week. Basically, techniques.
That's the strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I went to watch a minor league baseball game this weekend, this past week, and was paying some other stuff. So I didn't see a lot of baseball, but here's what I found. Did you know that, how am I going to phrase this? It's interesting. It's an interesting little statistical quirk I found. Did you know that on last Tuesday, Jose Altuve tied. Actually, he took the lead in most home runs given up by Tristan McKenzie from a single player with 2. That number was later tied by Nelson Cruz on Sunday.
God damn it, that guy.
It took Jose Altuve half as many at-bats to get to the number 2 as it did Nelson Cruz, though, with 4 instead of 2 at-bats. So there you go. Those two guys have beat more of the crap out of Tristan McKenzie in his short career than anyone else. The list of people he's given up home runs to is actually very short and interesting, featuring such names as Willie Castro, Whit Merrifield, Mike Ford, who I'm pretty sure exists still, Dexter Fowler, Tucker Barnhart, Adam Eaton, Rob Refsnyder.
Big name power hitters.
Really huge names. And then Nelson Cruz. Yeah, so an MVP, a silver slugger, and then other guys also who are alive. I would say the third best hitter on this list, who he's given a hit home run to, would be Tim Anderson, and then Whit Merrifield, and then just nothing. So I think that's a good sign because it shows that he doesn't wilt in front, or he's either an equal opportunity getting smashed or alternately. He's not afraid of the big guys. He actually just is afraid of the little guys. So I don't know.
That's a good one. I wonder if there is anything to that. Like if you pitch, so what would it be that he's attacking the bad guys too much? Maybe. His problem is he's not attacking enough. So.
Maybe he sees everyone the same, or else he gets into too many hitters counts. Let's see. 0-0-0-2-1-1-2-0-0-0-2-2. Actually, there's only like 3 hitters counts on this entire list.
Well, I mean, his problem usually is that he misses the zone when he's bad. And when he's good, we get games like yesterday where he was.
It was tremendous, by the way. This was kind of a secondary thing. The 2 home runs he gave up to Jose Altuve in one game, in consecutive at-bats, mind you. First one was on the 5th pitch. It was kind of a right down the middle, slightly lower than center. Second one was on the 7th pitch of the at-bat, and it was in the exact same location. To which I will say, please stop throwing the ball there. That was Altuve. And he says, no, I will continue to do this. Yeah. Just a big circle. This area, avoid. I guess in part we can blame Minute Maid Park for that because it's a stupid park with a big, dumb, well, small, dumb porch out there. And
it's small in stature, but big and dumb. And
yeah, you know. Big, dumb, stupid, small. And then they got rid of the hill. There's no reason to love that park, I've decided.
I mean, it's the train. That's all I got left.
Oh, yeah, they got the train. Never mind. The train's cool. Back in the top three. All right. All right, cool.
But yeah, I mean, that brings up the question. I mean, is Tristan McKenzie good now? Like you mentioned that when we were talking about topics. And I looked, and he's so still inconsistent. But I mean, now we're getting to the point where the good games are more consistent than the bad ones, at least. Like he's in his last four, he only had one complete meltdown. After that, he's been, I mean, pretty good.
And I would say the best offense in baseball,
right? Yeah,
one of the Astros, you know.
And, but he was good against the Rays too. So
who's also good offense? So yeah, that's the thing. Like, is he good or is he not? I was actually researching that a little bit because obviously his fastball velocity is far below average. None of his spin rates are particularly impressive. But I think the thing we all were hoping for would be he's so tall and lanky. Among starting pitchers with any level of actual like participation in baseball this year, as far as working, has the 13th highest extension at 6.8 feet in front of the rubber. So I think that was something that I know we all kind of wondered and thought about might be a good separator for him, despite his lack of velocity, is his perceived velocity by being again so long and lanky, being able to be closer to the mound when he releases to kind of give him a couple more visual miles per hour or things of that nature. I don't know, just something I kind of noticed. Again, it's not like he's like the highest like 7.5 feet, which is huge, but I think 13th highest, which and above average at 6.8 feet on average per pitch.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, he's got those something. Long arms. He's
exactly he's and long arms, legs. So. Like these are his physical separators. He, I think if he could get his velocity back up to what we saw when he like first debuted and he was 94, 95, 96. I think that's something he can work into perhaps, but over time. But I think for now that this is what we're going to see. And he's kind of become a kind of three pitch pitcher. I was looking at the last few games. I think he's thrown one changeup in all of July and like three changeups prior to that too. Like he's just not throwing anymore. He's really just kind of a fastball, curveball, slider guy, which in other guys it has made me complain. Guys like Sam Hinches, who is the exact same mix and throws harder and is bigger, but to obviously less effect. But he's trending in the right direction. You know, I mean, if you look at any of his charts, everything is going better time over time. His exit velocity is still the bottom 1% of the league. Barrel percentage also very bad. Walk rate is going down, though. I think that's the key to it. He needs to stop walking people. It's something he's never done before, and you just got to get back to that. I think he's thrown 25 changeups all year, so I don't know.
Yeah, the control is the real issue for him is just not walking swing. It seems like when he's – I mean, it's you can tell almost right away if he's going to have a good or bad game. Because he'll come out and he'll be attacking right away and he'll cruise to the first inning. Otherwise, he struggles and then you know it's not going to be a great afternoon. But I feel like the more the good games we get, the more – obviously the better it'll be. And I think Cleveland really needs it right now because they don't have Bieber Savali. I don't think Zach quite looks like himself yet. And I think it is also a good sign that like Mejia and Quantrill and Eli Morgan have – they're slowly looking like major league pitchers at the very least, which is exactly what Cleveland needs. So, I mean, even Mejia's ERA is still 7.52, but he has had a couple of good games where he doesn't look completely terrible. He just got to get out of those early innings. And I think we're getting to the point where these guys have finally gotten their playing time in. They got consistent. They can get back on the routine. And now they're not looking completely awful every time they go out. So,
and I think that's something we've been forgetting about too, right? Because it's kind of a two-part thing. One, we've just been so spoiled as fans of this team. To be able to see all of these guys be good, whether or not, I think part of it is it's a lack of remembering when Corey Kluber was merely a league average pitcher his first year. Like he was fine, he wasn't great, or Bieber, same thing, right? Or Clevinger, who was bad for a while. I mean, I think his third ever at bat, he gave up a dinger to what's his name, Miguel Cabrera, and then you look at some of these guys who they're leaning on now, right? Like Tristan McKenzie hasn't thrown 100 innings as a major leaguer. And he has thrown more innings than anyone else who's in their rotation outside of Zach Plesac. And so it takes time. It takes time for them to figure out what works and what doesn't. Case in point, not throwing his changeup, leaning on his slider more, being a more fastball heavy than I think you'd expect for a guy who only throws 92. He's still getting the strikeouts. So again, the walk rates are going down, I think. Mejia, same idea, right? I know you and I have talked several times about his inability to get out of the first inning, it seems like, but he seems to be getting better at it. Seems to be leaning on other pitches besides his sinker and his slider. I don't know. I think this is just what the part of this rebuilding year that we forgot we're going to have to deal with, because we hope that they have some guys to at least lean on. But, you know, what we got 70. Cal Quantrill now has 207 in career innings pitched as a major leaguer. Like, he's at 72.2 for the year. Eli Morgan has a career, like, 5 innings pitched, something like that. It's going to take a while. And I think they're trending in the right direction. This is where Cleveland, I think, makes its bones, is helping guys find out what works and then leaning on that kind of stuff and then building around that. You know, look at, I think Shane Bieber is a perfect example of that. He was good at one thing, and he was good at two things, and then that second thing got absolutely dominant in his curveball, slider, whatever we want to call it, and then he just built off of that. So,
yeah, and hopefully that's still as dominant when he comes back and can't use any sticky stuff on his hands. But
well, the thing is, like, it was. I refuse to believe he was using a ton of sticky stuff. I'm not going to say in like last year. I'm assuming everyone was, but also it was a weird year. But like in 2019, I don't think if you look at it, any of his numbers, he didn't have some kind of crazy amount of breakout and stuff. He was a 3.28 ERA guy, threw 214 innings. Like, he was. But he got by on location and craft, basically. It's almost it's crazy to say this, but maybe it's almost like the sticky stuff made his stuff break too much, and so it was easier to not swing it. That's stupid, I know. But at the same time, is it stupid? I don't know. So he's got a Cy Young now, and even if he just comes back and is merely a 3.28 pitcher, you know what I mean? Like, he was that in 2019, he was that again this year, striking out a ton of guys, still not walking anyone, so...
Yeah, I don't think, like, even before the ban, like, he didn't look like, which I don't think it's too terrible to say he's not like a, what, 1.63 ERA pitcher. Like, maybe he's just a guy who hovers around 3 and still wins a Cy Young once in a while. Maybe he's not the best pitcher in baseball every single year. He's still a super good pitcher. So,
like, literally the way offenses are and the way the way the game is, like, having a guy who can go deep and throw have a 3 ERA, that's literally all you want. Like, if they had 5 of those, they'd win a World Series, because they did have that and they went to a World. Well, everyone got hurt in August, but they had that for a while, and then they kept on winning a ton of games. I think that they actually had that active, and they won 22 games in a row, right? Like, that's what you want out of teams, and I think that it's just going to take a while. I mean, I think Eli Morgan's a perfect example of him figuring out what's working over time. His ERA is garish, but he's outperforming. His fielding independent pitching is still 6.18, but he's not walking people. He's striking people out, and he's just giving up a lot of home runs because he needs to understand what doesn't and what does work, and I think he's going to. You know, it's a learning process. You can't count. You can't point to 31 innings of a career, and I don't even know how many in the college, and you know how many in the minors. Like, another 330 in the minors. Like, you got to think he's only had 360 as a professional pitcher. He doesn't know anything yet. So, and he looks great. Honestly, I think Eli Morgan of any of these guys, he flashes things. It's kind of blows my mind that he can do that kind of thing. That changeup is so stupid.
That third pitch that's killing me as far as calling him really good. But I assume that's one thing he can work on the offseason, especially. Like, he knows this is the one thing he needs to focus on is getting – I think that slider is so bad there's not much helping it. But his curveball, maybe there's something there. Like, he just needs a third pitch. And we saw, like, this last time who was it again? Was it against the Astros, was it? I don't know. But whoever he pitched against, he didn't use that changeup until, like, the second time through the order. So he did a lot better through the second time. It was until like the third time where he started to struggle, but that's the thing he needs to do. Like, if he can get his fastball working as well as it did, despite the fact that it's only like mid 90s, and he was a little higher than normal in his last outing, he was like 93, 94. So if he can do that and then throw a changeup second half to the order and then work in a curveball later on, like, they got another starter. That's another fifth guy, another Josh Tomlin who can eat up a bunch of innings and maybe give up home run once in a while, but.
And maybe be more than that too. I think that's the thing. I think he could be more than that because I think he already has better stuff. I mean, Josh Tomlin had a really good curveball, admittedly.
Yeah, no, I think he definitely has better stuff. Like, I never thought of Josh Tomlin as a stuff pitcher. He was just kind of a guy who he just battled all the time, which was fun to watch. But, and he's still doing it too. Like, he made Fernando Tatis look really bad. It wasn't bad. So that was fun. He's still around. Josh Tomlin's still kicking down there in Atlanta. But
is he really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He still
he is, huh? Good for him, man. Yeah. What a career.
Now, we won't know as far as the reinforcements for the rotation, at least until next month, we're not going to be at full strength. Cleveland, the last 2 days, they've had a bunch of bad news about pitchers, which I guess isn't, at least for in Bieber's case, I don't think it's completely unexpected. We talked about when he was first injured and they put him on the 10-day DL. It's just kind of how you do it. You leave him there until you absolutely have to move him to the 60-day for a roster spot, and now they need it because they signed some other pitcher. I think they traded for a guy who was on waivers. He used to be a top prospect, but not anymore, but... they just needed more roster space. They reactivated Cam Hill. I think he's the one who took over for Bieber's spot, but scam the cam. but yeah, Bieber's been out since June 14th. They moved him to the 60-day L, so he can come back August 14th, which is kind of brutal, but it's not completely unexpected. I think also he's moving slower than Cleveland sort of thought, which is concerning. He told Chris Antonetti, told Cleveland.com, it's just been a little bit slower to respond than maybe we had hoped. It's something that may be lingering in there a little bit. He continued to feel better, but maybe just not at the pace we would have normally expected. And for Cleveland to say that, like, as a team that doesn't usually say anything, it's kind of concerning. The word lingering is always bad for me. I think that is back to Michael Brantley. He always had something lingering, and then it got worse, and then he was out for a year. So I hate that word lingering, and they use that. There's something obviously still bugging him. I'd rather, like, if he was hurt and then he comes back, but there's something there. And then Savali, he's been out since June 22nd with the middle finger sprain. He's eligible to return now on August 23rd. He threw a bullpen session. It sounds like he's a lot closer than Bieber actually is. Like, he's actually throwing bullpen. It's going to be all fastballs, they said, but he still can't come back to the 23rd, which I guess is also not completely unexpected. He sprained his finger, which you kind of need those to pitch. So I can see why he's out. But this is, as far as the team place itself, like, they are 9 games back in the division. They're barely a 500 team. Like, I'm at the point where I don't see this as a team who's trying to make the playoffs. It's just shooting to not let Terry Francona go below 500 in what could be his last season as a manager. Like, at this point, it's because the pitching's not going to be at full strength. They might get something, but the schedule's not going to get any easier. The offense, I don't know how much better it's going to get, but we'll talk about trade down and stuff in a minute. But just as far as Bieber and Savali, is any of this surprising to you that they're not coming back? Or
I mean, the Savali, I think maybe a little bit, kind of sucks. You said the lingering thing is kind of a bummer with Bieber. I don't know. It's interesting because I don't know if you ever go on the, or any listeners go on to the baseball subreddit. It's fine. One of the less scummy areas of that website. Spent a lot of time on that website. Because he wants to work during the workday. But someone does post every week everyone's, like, ERA versus runs, like their ability to, their overall performance, right? It's like runs per game versus runs given up per game or something like that. And, like, where you want to be would be in the lower right-hand quadrant, which is confusing. Usually you want to be in the lower left-hand quadrant, or upper right-hand quadrant is usually where, like, Lionel Messi shows up in any of those charts. But the better you are, you're going to be in the lower left. If you're perfectly average, you're right around the middle. And Cleveland's been floating right around very basically average for the entire season. In fact, I think a little bit outperforming where their stats say they should be, because they're above 500, and it, according to this thing, they should be somewhere just slightly under 500, which I think speaks to a lot of different things about their willingness, their management, the intangible crap that we can't really quantify. I was really kind of hoping they'd come back, like you said, kind of get them, drag them to 87 wins, not have a great season, have an okay season. Like you said, the division's about out of reach at this point. Eloy Jimenez is coming back amazingly. The White Sox keep on getting better. So, yeah, it'd be nice for them to just kind of grind it out, but it kind of stinks. I think Savali taking that long to come back. Like, it was, what, a sprained finger, right, is what you said? Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I figured that it would take, like... I was thinking it would take less time than effectively what seems like 2 months.
Yeah,
to come back.
I sprained my finger and I was back, Merritt. I was back typing on that keyboard.
Listen, I'm out here playing every day. I jammed my pinky when I was in the 11th grade. It's still messed up looking. But guess what I'm doing? Stuff with my drinking tea and everything. I'm over here.
I'm still watching because I'm a real fan.
Listen, I got my eyes open on the screen all the time, except when I fall asleep while taking a nap because my cat lied down on top of me. Listen, all right? I ate a bit too much barbecue. Took a little nap after that watching the game. Beyond that, though, I'm still watching. But yeah, like you said, it's a bit of a damper. I mean, hey, if you want to be positive about it, and I'm good at that, blessing the skies, more chances for the young guys to take their lumps, figure out what works, and see if they actually have something here. Because as we'll get to in a few minutes, they have a massive number of players who are on their 40-man roster, and they need to do something about it and figure out what works and what doesn't, whether they actually have players to build around the stars for the foreseeable future. Because they could be good again soon, and this is not the season for it, and I'd prefer Shane Bieber be healthy next year specifically to lead the rotation, Savali, and please, I can let these guys to back him up and, you know, have a nice, robust rotation and have a, you know, have a go 7 deep again.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, like they have been.
As soon as next year is the year they can start being, I mean, pretty good offensively. You bring Nolan Jones up at some point this season, I'd figure you have to. He's been really hot lately. If Owen Miller figures it out and he can actually hit a ball, then maybe he's good. Andres Jimenez, if he comes back, and I don't know, you're going to deal Cesar Hernandez probably at the deadline, and you get Ahmed Rosario, do something with him. Maybe he's your shortstop and he lives up to what he was supposed to be when they dealt Lindor for him. But there's just so many players coming up the pipeline. Oscar Gonzalez could be a surprise next year, the year after, maybe. He's still pretty really young for AAA, but he's there and still crushing the ball. So,
I mean, they got to figure out the pitching. But I think this is, like I said, a blessing in disguise to see if listen, we've gone through a lot of names here, but if one or two of Mackenzie, Hench's, Mejia, Quantrill, who else, Morgan, and then one or two other guys we haven't even thought about, like if one or two of those turns into something approaching an above league average starter, that'll be a great rotation coming in next year. And I'd prefer Shane Bieber feel discomfort now and be healthy next year, because I know it was a short season last year, but he was really wearing a lot of innings, and he was doing that at the beginning of this year too, and it was just strange all around. So
yeah, it's not too hard to visualize this rotation as again being overflowing with quality. When I mean, you have Bieber, Savali, and Plezak, and then if you got Mackenzie, if you can assume he's your number four, like you have, what are we back to, like four guys who can be your number five? That's what we wanted coming into the season, and we could have it again. Like if you got to find a way to give Quantrill, Mejia, and Eli Morgan innings just because there's no room anymore because the rest of your rotation's filled out, then you're in a pretty good spot.
So I think, I don't know, it's I'm not going to say troubling because I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing, but it is a little worrisome, I suppose, how much closer the Tigers are than they were a little while back as far as taking over the third overall spot. But
well, I mean, like the Royals, they were leading the division for a little bit there, and that didn't
work out. And, that's true. Yeah, they really kind of fell into a toilet, didn't they?
Boy, the Tigers have lost three in a row now, so they're coming back down a little bit, so I'm not too concerned. But
so, like, I don't know. The Cleveland is not going to be playing the Astros and
you can make some October plans, I think. I don't think you had to plan a little Halloween vacation or whatever if you want to do it.
But like, they get to play some bad teams again. I think they'll finish up like an 87 win season. Like we've been talking about, it's where this kind of team ends up. A team that has talent, is dinged up, and can kind of scrape its way back to legitimacy and figure it out for next year, because they have talent. They just need to figure out whether it's going to work in the majors this year, next year, and figure out what is going to work. I think that's the hardest leap for pitchers, because outside of like Steven Strasburg or something, it takes a while for it to figure out what you're going to throw, because none of these guys have the 97 mile an hour fastball with the big changeup, the big curve, and all that stuff. Like, none of these guys were finished products. And I think Cleveland, really, even that big run they had over the last decade, has never had a finished product coming out. It's always been an evolution into something great. And it takes years like this to get there. So what are you gonna do? You know, shoot.
Yeah. And between now and the next podcast, we'll actually find out what they're doing to, I guess, either if they think, I would assume at this point that I don't know if they can. They think they can go for it this year somehow, or if they're just going to kind of sell off with what little pieces they have. But I guess just in general, what do you think they're going to do at the deadline between now and the next podcast? We'll have our answers already, depending on what they do. But they don't have a whole lot to sell. I mean, like, they're not going to trade Jose Ramirez, despite what JP Morosi was just spitballing, throwing out there out of nowhere, and then had to update his own fake rumor that it wasn't real, which was very entertaining. But
good journalism.
Good. Everybody seems to agree that Jose Ramirez is not being moved, which I think is good. And then you just have, like, I guess Cesar Hernandez. I think the fact that he's hit up so many home runs is kind of makes him more enticing as I think he has another year left, so another year and a half rental for him. Eddie Rosario has been hurt, and he's not been good, so I don't see a whole lot of value in him. But I think they're going to technically sell, but there's nothing to sell, so it's going to look a lot like they're not doing anything, which is kind of annoying and unfortunate. But we might have to also see some of the 40-man guys who they'll have to do something if they can get somebody controlled. Like the Padres just got the who'd they get from the Pirates? Adam Frazier? Adam Frazier, something like that, where it's just a super young guy who's controlled. Like, if they get...
He's 29, to be clear.
Well, yeah, not super young, but like young enough he's controlled for a couple of years. Like, dip back into the Pirates and try to get... I cannot remember his name. Brian...
Let me just think for a minute and try and remember for you.
Brian.
I believe you're thinking of Brian Reynolds.
That's the one.
Center fielder. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I would give... I can't think of a prospect I wouldn't trade like for him. He's under control. He's young. He's super good. I mean, I know Cleveland loves a lot of their prospects, but if a bunch of these guys are going to be gone, they just go all in and get him. But I don't think they're going to do that, and I think it's fair that they don't. I think we're going to see at the deadline they're not going to do much, and it's not like an outrage because they're not close. They don't have anything to sell unless you want them to trade Jose Ramirez. So it's going to be a boring deadline, and I think we're all just going to kind of be okay with it.
I think, first of all, I think the funniest thing about people talk after John Paul Morosi is creating that idea.
Like, that's a good way to put it. Just created the
whole cloth. Here it is. People like if you look at the comments, like, oh, great. Now they're going to get half of what they would last year. It's like, that's not how trade value works. It's not linear. It's I don't know. What's the other thing with the curve? Parabolic or something like that? Exponential? But it's not even exponential. It's like, if you traded him now, you'd need an entire farm system. If you traded him next year at the same time, you'd need most of a farm system. Like, that's how good he is and how valuable he is to teams who want him. That being said, I think Cleveland does have the reverse problem. They're facing an issue with like the 40-man roster. They basically have too much talent in the minors right now, and not enough. I think they should be buying. I think your idea for Brian Reynolds, we're both forgetting it already. Yeah, Brian Reynolds or someone like that. Trade the prospects you have. Like, do it. Well, what's the problem? Because this is like the reason you have prospects is not just to have guys come up and be good and, you know, and have them fully, you know, evolve. Like, look at the Rays. Like, the Rays traded for Nelson Cruz. They, you know, I will definitely point to them as, you know, a bad example of how baseball has turned into a commodified pile of garbage, a hyper-commodified pile of garbage. It always has been that in a way, but being taken over by hedge fund guys has not helped. But, like, if you look at their roster, it's all these guys from different teams that they traded for. And they made a move, and because they either saw something in him or he was talented, and they were going to help him win now and not damage it. Like, you know, yes, for every Wander Franco out there, there's the guys they traded for Nelson Cruz, or the guys they traded for, the move when they traded for Tyler Glasnow, I guess, right? Because that was like,
That was just Chris Archer for Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows. That was an absolute destruction of the Pirates.
It's like, kind of a reversal right there. But you know, like, there's all these players on this roster that are the kind of moves that I'd like to see Cleveland make to get your aforementioned Brian Reynoldses of the world, guys who are a little bit perhaps out of the curve of a team trying to compete. I mean, that said, the Pirates are in a division that's stinky, where everyone is somehow selling and buying at the same time. And they could probably compete in like 2 or 3 years. So having someone like Reynolds around when he's 28 to 30 could be valuable. But I'm just saying, like, there's guys like that out there. Like, I'm sure you could find someone like that they'd be a buyer. What are some selling teams? I don't know. There's probably some guys in the Twins the Cubs or something you could probably get. They just trade for Chris Bryant.
There you go. Just keep, that's a year rental. I don't know if I'd get Chris Bryant, but
yeah, you know.
Yeah, I think the problem is like, if you're going to do the Rays thing, you kind of have to commit to it all the way. Like, because their whole thing is they'll trade anybody anytime and they just get incremental upgrades. But like, and we've talked about it before with Cleveland, the situation they're in, like these incremental upgrades don't help them a ton because they're like the Rays are just the equivalent of taking their outfield and bumping it up a tiny bit. The Cleveland needs a huge upgrade in their outfield right now to be competitive. So unless you're going to commit to it, then you wind up like the Mariners, who are just always bad because they're trying to be the Rays, but they're not winning every trade. Like that's all the Rays do. They just, as long as they're always getting a win in a trade, they'll trade somebody. They'll trade Snell after he was an MVP. They're a Cy Young. They'll trade Chris Archer after he was a really good pitcher. They'll trade anybody. As long as they're getting the most value out of a trade, they'll make it. And you just got to commit to that if you're going to do it. And you're always going to be getting slightly better and getting rid of slightly worse players. But if you're not, you're just going to get stuck in the middle and then you're bad forever. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, Cleveland's been doing that in fairness, right? They traded Corey Kluber. He got hurt and now he's kind of wherever. They got a little bit lucky on this stuff, obviously. But like, they traded Carrasco. He's been on the DL. They traded specifically all their good pitchers over the last decade. And they're all on the disabled list or other thing.
Well, yeah, that's different. They're just good at knowing when they're going to be injured. I don't know if that's luck or if they can identify that they're super good at it. Like if that's what they're purposely trading these guys before they
really
know
gross, injured. Honestly.
But well, I mean, it's really gross. Like if they have a way to monitor this and they can catch something, then they're really good at this weird thing they're doing. But I think mostly they're just doing standard trading stuff, right? Like they're getting Lindor. They traded him when he had a year left. Carrasco, they traded before. Well, then his contract might get more expensive or something, but yeah. But I mean, they're not doing anything out of the ordinary. Now would be trading Jose Ramirez. Would be like what the Rays would do if they could find somebody with more value.
No, out of the ordinary would be because that doesn't make any sense. Because again, like I was saying before, the actual net value is not there. A trade that they would do would be trading like.
Well, yeah, but they can't find it. But if they could, so like.
Yeah, exactly. But like I don't know
Zach Plesac trading him.
Zach Plesac would be a good example, I suppose. I mean, now because he's hurt and everything, he's had to figure his way back. But yeah, that'd be an interesting trade. Their specific issue in trying to pull any of this off right now is that they're all just so young and have so much control while also being all potential and no value. You know, like you're not going to trade Franmil Reyes because he's just cheap and good and young. You're not going to trade Jose Ramirez because he's too expensive and you're not going to get the value back. But then you're not going to trade Bradley Zimmer even though he's had a hot couple of weeks because there's no value there. So,
yeah. Like, I'd love to trade Bradley Zimmer if someone would take him. Like, I love that long-faced man, but I don't know if there's anything out there for him. And like the Eddie Rosario thing sucks too. Part of me thinks that's why they did it. They got him just to flip him at the deadline. And then he was terrible and he's been injured. And I don't think anybody wants him for anything.
Or to fill, I think it's to fill
a hole too, because there's nobody out there. But
we're optimistic, certainly, that he'd play out there until June. They trade him and then they'd bring him Nolan Jones. But that didn't happen. And it continues to not happen, which is curious to me. But I guess I just can't be mad about things. So Harold Ramirez would be good. If he got hot and started really performing, trading him would almost make sense. But he's the kind of player that the Rays would sit on for a year, get his OPS plus up to like 110, 115, and then move him for a guy who's a little bit younger, with a little bit higher of a ceiling, and go from there. So that's the kind of player, I suppose. Yeah.
You mentioned it's part of what's the bad about the commoditization of baseball. I hope Cleveland doesn't turn into that kind of like endless factory of just trading guys. And I get Rays fans still like their players, but I like having players around. I don't have any fans,
so, well, you know.
The ones that are there on Twitter and that will yell at us for saying that. But I think
Cleveland has fans who don't show up. But listen, they still get high ratings on television, everyone. So yeah. Checkmate, all right? What are the ratings for the Rays? I don't even know. Yeah.
They don't even know. They're in Florida. They're in the Rays. They're named after Sunshine. They don't count. It's fine.
They got all the sunshine there, so yeah. But I think they should be buyers, though, in a way like that, where they move guys who are just going to clog at the 40-man for someone who can bring pseudo-immediate impact.
Yeah, I think part of it will be – I mean, they basically just have to forecast who they think will be taken. Like, if they got to look around to 40 spots, 40-man spots, like, who else has a bunch of room? Like, maybe there just isn't a bunch of teams that can afford to do that, and they can risk leaving some more guys on, but I mean, we're going to see so many that have to be protected. And I mean, the other problem is like the guys they've given shots have not been that great. Bobby Bradley's been good, but then bad for a while. Owen Miller was awful. And I get why he got sent back down. That was fair. Totally fair. I get it. I'm usually one to be mad about that. But like Daniel Johnson's been pretty bad. He's had a couple home runs at least. But I mean,
it's like five at bats, though. Like I just,
but
like,
it's once again, so bad. And
I will pass no judgments on him because I don't know. He's only striking out 30 something percent.
how much is he walking, man?
You know,
2.5.
It's not walk. Well, he's walked. So I don't know what you want me to say here, man.
He has a walk rate.
He has. Yeah, it's not null. So I mean, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
On the 20 to 80 scale, it'd have to be at least 20 because you can't go down to zero. So I mean,
listen, how many hits? How many players in baseball history have less than 8 hits in their career? I'm actually going to find out.
One of them is Daniel Johnson.
No, he has exactly 8. Oh, there you go. Let's see. Combined totals for careers. We're going for a journey here. Hits.
It's just going to be so rough because like these guys haven't been good. That's what they needed. They needed to – I think – I mean, we talked about this so many times, but I think they found enough about Daniel Johnson between what they've seen up close in the minors and in the camp last year and what they've seen in the majors. Like, I don't think they believe in him anymore, which maybe can outperform it, which would be great. But like Owen Miller has been awful. Gabriel Arias, I think, could come up this year, maybe, even though he's super young this year, next year. The Nolan Jones thing is still confusing to me. Just the fact they haven't brought him up. Like, what are you missing out not having him up? Like, you're not manipulating server time anymore. You're just not bringing up a guy who's hitting really well.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I mean, he's just kind of, I don't know. I guess they think he needs to work on his
bunting. Defense.
Bunting? They love that. They love bunting on his dumb team.
Fangraphs gave him 70 raw power on a 28 scale, which is crazy to me. I mean, he had 16 home runs in 2018 in single A, but...
Okay, I finally found out the number. Number of players with less than 8 hits in their career all time.
That's going to be a lot of players.
9,580. That's right, man. That's right.
There you go.
Sandy Alcantara is the first person to come up on this list, that's bizarrely. You're right. Let me pull up this so it's not pitcher.
Oh, there you go. That'll fix everything. That'll be way less people.
Not pitcher. Get results. There we go. This will solve it. I accidentally did it greater than or equal to 7. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's too many players.
So just subtract that from the total number of players who've ever played in baseball. And there you go.
You get the number you need. 3,867. So he's more hits than 3,800 non-pitcher players ever in baseball history. So
makes him pretty good.
So pretty good, Daniel Johnson. We love you.
Pretty good.
Possibly the best DJ on the team with the last name Johnson.
The best beard, but maybe not the best DJ Johnson
on
the beard.
Not by a long shot.
Yeah. On that note, Marina, it's going to do it for us this week. If you haven't already, subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you do, leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow us on Twitter @CoverTheCorner. On Facebook, find us Covering the Corner. I'm on Twitter at Matt RLY. Merritt's at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch. Wait, no. Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch.
There you go. You nailed it.
I've done it so many times, you think I'd have it. But yeah, that'll do it. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll see you then.
Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.